For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Boundaries, owning, implementing, and sabotaging. So think about how many boundaries in your life you have chosen, and how many have you inherited? The inherited ones are commitments that you've made that you really no longer believe in. Things that you do that really don't serve you anymore. Because if you want to choose your boundaries, you have to locate the childhood experiences that unconsciously shaped some of your boundaries, the ones that you inherited. Our boundaries are often shaped by inherited beliefs that took root in childhood. You unconsciously absorbed many of your boundaries from your parents, who absorbed them from their parents. And others came from cultural beliefs that have passed down through generations. Terry Cole says, during your childhood, your family of origin had specific rules of engagement that informed the way members related to each other and the outside world. These rules set the stage for how well or poorly you create boundaries in your personal and professional relationships today. In thinking about that, I came up with a number of boundaries that I inherited, such as don't have any needs that you can't take care of yourself. Don't ask for help. When offered help, decline it in case they really don't want to help but are just offering to be nice. And the one my mother said all the time, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. I recognize that each of these boundaries comes with a should. And when you start shoulding on yourself, you can be pretty sure that those boundaries or rules of engagement are the ones that are inherited. They're not the ones that are in alignment with your true values. And when we're living with boundaries that don't align with our authentic self, you get stuck in what Terry Cole calls disordered boundary hell. You're trying to live your life by rules that you no longer need to keep you safe. And these rules stunt your growth, and they often limit your opportunities. So it's no wonder that many of us feel restless. We're not comfortable or at ease because we live our lives based on rules that no longer apply. And we can never do enough, so we rush around. We're longing for something, but we don't know what it is. So we check our phones, we open our refrigerator, and we keep busy in a myriad of ways. Staying busy gives us the unobvious gain of not having to feel, face, or experience whatever unpleasant feeling is coming up. So when we feel this way, the best thing we can do is stop and breathe. And then ask yourself what it is you get not to feel, face, or experience if you're staying so busy, running around through these boundaries. Asking this question is a powerful tool for moving past your resistance. Our brains perceive ambiguity as a threat, especially if you've got know-it-all tendencies like I do. It's much easier to live our lives with explicit rules and absolute truths than it is to question them. So a lot of times we're living our lives based on absolute rules from our childhood that have nothing to do with our well-being today. But we don't question them because that's uncertainty, and nobody wants to live with uncertainty. Terry Cole says, connecting the dots between current challenges and unresolved conflicts or injuries from the past can help you make more informed choices and decisions. The goal is to create enough understanding and internal space so you can mindfully respond instead of instinctually react, making boundary decisions consciously in the here and the now. So we all know that if we slow down, we can see more clearly. That the goal of mindfulness is to really make the unconscious conscious, so we see the whole big picture. Instead of burying the hidden rules and beliefs in your mind, we want to take them out and look at them, because we can't change what we can't see. So we're going to do a little reflection, and then I will leave it up to the group whether we want to share some of our thoughts from the reflection afterwards. So again, getting into a posture that's alert and yet relaxed, with a strong back and a soft front. When you think back to your childhood home, were people allowed to have their own private thoughts, conversations, relationships, space? Were you allowed or encouraged to express your ideas and feelings, even if they were different from your family's? When there was conflict, did you calmly talk issues out? Did you scream over each other? Or did you brush things under the carpet? Were you allowed to have needs? Or was the expectation that you just take care of other people's needs? And based on those thoughts, think about what boundaries you inherited. Again, mine were, it's not okay to have needs. Don't ask for help. Decline help when it's offered. And if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So just take a moment to think about what boundaries you might have inherited. So we all know that our childhood experiences, especially the negative ones, really impact our boundaries or our ability to set boundaries and to implement them. And there's two ways I see to implement boundaries. And for me, they're equally challenging. One is asking for your desires or your non-negotiable needs to be met, which is hard for me to do. And the other is a two-letter word we need to say when people ask us to do things that we don't want to do or don't have time to do. And that's really hard too. So sometimes instead of implementing our boundaries, we just try to avoid the situation. We don't answer the phone when someone calls, or we don't return their call if we think that they're going to ask us to do something that we don't want to do or we don't have time to do. And avoidance has a benefit of putting off the discomfort of communicating our boundaries. So one of the things that I found especially meaningful for me was that there's this unobvious gain of putting it off, and that's what keeps me from going through the short-term discomfort to get to the longer-term benefit, is I have this very short-term benefit of putting it off. But we have to honor our boundaries both in words and in actions, because that's the only way people are going to understand that you're serious about your boundaries. If you say no, but then get talked into it, people are never going to accept your no because you're so easy to talk into it. So you really need to explicitly state what you want so there's very little room for others to interpret. So assertive statements are the best way to do this. And the simpler the statement, the better. Like, this is what's healthy for me. If you start explaining your boundaries and why you need them and all of that, all you're doing is giving the other person the opportunity to talk you out of your boundary. You're giving them the information they need to turn it around on you and talk you out of it. So as much as I would like my husband and my family and my friends to read my mind and know what I need, it doesn't happen. If I don't specifically ask for my needs to be met, they won't know what my needs are, no matter how much they love me. And wishing won't help, because I've tried it. I can tell you for sure, wishing that they would just know or do something just doesn't work. Because boundaries are not unspoken. Boundaries have to be spoken. And it's hard to begin to ask someone to do something differently or to do something for you. I worry about being perceived as selfish if I ask for help. But my assumption is sometimes incorrect. Recently, I asked my ex to pick up our granddaughters in Milwaukee so I would not have to drive them both ways. And I felt like I was really imposing on him, because I was the one who said I would watch the girls for the week. And when I picked up the girls from his house, I just heard about what a great time they had. So all of my worrying about imposing on him was incorrect. So now I'm trying to practice assuming that the other person is glad to help me out. And that's a practice. Just like mindfulness is a practice, I have to consciously say, oh, this person is glad to help me out. When you begin setting and communicating your boundaries, you'll find there's no such thing as guilt-free boundaries. Each time you share a boundary or you say that two-letter word, you'll feel guilty. But with practice, the guilty feeling will diminish. After asking my ex to pick up the girls, I did feel guilty. With some pre-planning, I could have found the time to pick them up in Milwaukee and still be prepared for the Mindful Moments group at 12:30. So I just felt like, oh, I shouldn't have asked that. I could have done this myself. And I was feeling really guilty that I imposed on him. Another issue that you can avoid is assuming that the energy between you is going to become weird when you state your boundary. If you assume the other person's not going to like it, or they're going to be upset about it, or things are just going to be weird, guess what? They are going to be weird. So you have to assume they're going to be okay so that you don't create the uncomfortable tone that you want to avoid. Just assume people will be okay with your boundaries and act accordingly. Because people who really care for you may have a learning curve to get used to you having boundaries, but they will be okay with your boundaries eventually. So the second way to communicate boundaries is by saying no when you're asked to do something that you don't want to do. And if you're like me, your default answer is probably okay. And maybe it's with a bit of resentfulness in the tone of voice. But to change this pattern, one of the things you can do is buy some time. Don't automatically say sure or okay. Stop, take a couple of breaths, preferably take sleep on it if it's a bigger thing. Take some time to put off your response, because this gives you time to interrupt your ingrained pattern, your unconscious habit of saying yes, so that you have the space to think about, do I really want to do this? Do I have the time to do this? And am I enabling this person by doing it for something for them that they could easily do themselves? So it gives you time to think it through. But you have to put the work in on your boundaries to make sure they're respected. If you don't put the work in, your boundaries will never be respected. So you have to do what you say you're going to do, and you have to not do what you say you're not going to do, which is the hardest one for me. And when you're not consistent, people are not going to honor your boundaries. If you said no and people aren't listening, one of the things you can do is tell them to stop asking. I said no, don't ask me again. And they ask again, and I said no, don't ask me again. And it's hard to do because that's not the way we were socialized. We're socialized to take care of everything. And so as women, we tend to do a lot more self-sabotaging of our boundaries than men do. Unconsciously, we self-sabotage, derailing our best efforts of creating, maintaining, and enforcing healthy boundaries. According to Terry Cole, the significant ways we do this are the blame, shame, guilt trifecta, the boundary reversal, and the victim martyr syndrome. And I've got all of those going on. So the blame, shame, guilt trifecta. When we blame others, we don't take responsibility for maintaining our boundaries. Well, it's not going to work because he's not going to do this anyway. And so we just give up. So there's the blame. The shame, when we feel shame, we feel like there's something wrong with us. So we feel like we're not worthy of our boundaries, so we don't protect them. I don't deserve to have this boundary because I'm not good enough. I've got something wrong with me. And for me, I think guilt is the hardest of the trifecta, probably because I was raised Catholic. I can't create a boundary without feeling guilty that I did something wrong by setting that boundary. But I can get used to the feeling of guilt, and I can maintain my boundary even though I'm feeling guilty. And the more I do this, the easier it will get. And that kind of leads right into the boundary reversal. When I'm feeling guilty that I set this boundary, my initial reaction to make myself feel better would be to just simply revoke the boundary. So the boundary reversal is as soon as you set the boundary, you revoke it. The adult in you knows that your boundary is fine, but it's the kid in you calling the shots to renege on your boundary. Terry Cole says try waiting 2 days before taking your boundary back. The delay will give you time to get used to the discomfort of setting a boundary. And over time, if you consistently hold your boundary for 48 hours, your anxiety is going to lessen, and the impulse to pull a boundary reversal will be in your rearview mirror. I worked with boundary reversal from the time I asked my ex to pick up the girls until the day he picked them up. I had to sit with the discomfort of asking for help and not text him to say, "Don't worry about it, I can do it." And I'm hoping that the next time it's going to get just a little bit easier. It should be getting easier each time. The victim martyr syndrome is another one. When we feel like a victim, we feel helpless. We don't believe anything we do will make a difference, and we feel like what we want doesn't matter. So we give up and live by other people's boundaries. The martyrs are victims who keep score. We feel disempowered, so we overgive. We don't speak up, and then we secretly feel resentment, as if others owe us something. I was a martyr who overgave at work. Instead of slowing down and looking at the situation, when I got burnt out, I just switched jobs every 3 to 5 years. The fix for martyrs and victims is to slow down and look deeply at your life. By calming yourself through meditation, kindness practices, or self-compassion, you can deactivate your amygdala, the emotional part, and engage your prefrontal cortex. So instead of seeing only problems, the fresh perspective is going to enable you to see opportunities that you can put into action. So when I overburdened myself at work, I only saw problems. There's all this work to do and I have to do it. I never saw the opportunity of talking with my boss about delegating and getting more help. Instead, I just switched jobs, ran away from it. So we sabotage our boundaries sometimes, but other people sabotage our boundaries as well. Some people just cannot listen and consider your preferences, your thoughts, or your feelings. And no matter how clearly you state your boundaries, they just aren't going to get it. They might use predatory behavior just to ensure that you're going to keep the status quo, because the status quo is good for them. You're particularly susceptible to this if you, like me, have the disease to please. And the way they sabotage is by flipping the script. Instead of saying that it's all about them, they flip the focus off of themselves and their shadiness, and they flip it onto you. They might pretend that they're very concerned and wondering why you're so sensitive all of a sudden. What's the matter with you? Because there's something wrong with you, not them. Or they might get upset with you for asking a simple question or blow it totally out of proportion. They're really splitting hairs and distorting what you've said because they don't want things to change. You know, they've been taken care of for all this time and they don't want to have to change things. Sometimes they do gaslighting. And gaslighting is using denial, misdirection, or contradiction and lying to make you question your memory, your perception, and your sanity. So they might say they never heard you ask for them to do something or that you wouldn't do something. Or they'll tell you, you agreed to do it. I know you said you'd do it. Aren't you going to keep your word? When you never did. And so that's something to watch out for. If you're around people who don't accept your boundaries, you want to be very careful to observe their behavior. You want to call things out as soon as you see them. A boundary destroyer will not apologize and they won't ask how you feel. More likely, they'll repeat the offense, mock you for your sensitivity, or drop you altogether. And it's pointless to try and win with them. So it's important to know that some people just have to be dropped if you're going to keep your boundaries. So to set healthy boundaries, you have to begin by looking at what boundaries you own and which ones you inherited. You may decide the inherited ones have served their purpose and can be discarded. Next, you need to communicate your boundary in words, not wishes in your head. State them in assertive and yet simple terms. To get people to honor your boundaries, you need to be consistent in keeping them yourself, even when you feel guilty. And you have to be mindful of any tendency you may have to sabotage your boundaries. as well as incredibly diligent at seeing and calling out others who disrespect your boundaries.